on entanglement and the foundations of statistical mechanics.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I would like to thank the organizer for inviting me. It's a delight to be here for the conference in your honor, Abner. So what I'm going to talk is a different subject than the ones I usually talk, which are very much inspired by your inequality. In effect, my first independent paper was on Clausenhorn, Shimoni, Holt inequalities. But today I will talk about entanglement in a totally different context, involving slightly more than two particles. Well, in fact, many more than two particles, because the title of my talk is Entanglement and the Foundations of Statistical Mechanics. Now, this is a work done together with Tony Short, my postdoc, and Andreas Winter, my colleague in mathematics. And another part of the results presented here are done also together with Yakira Haronov and Noach Linden. Well, why do I want to talk about statistical mechanics? Well, statistical mechanics is by now a very well established theory. It has been along for quite a long time, and it just delivers result after result after result, and it's clearly very well established and very successful. And statistical mechanics evolved from classical statistical mechanics to quantum statistical mechanics, and it is as good as ever. In any case, if you look at the introduction of the book of Feynman on statistical mechanics, he says that statistical mechanics is like climbing a hill and then going down the other side. While climbing is trying to deduce the basic principles of statistical mechanics till you get up to, say, the canonical distribution or equipartition, something like that. And then you start applying all these results for specific problems. And most of the work, of course, is to apply all these basic results in everyday problems and go and compute a tremendous number of different systems. And everything works perfectly. The point is, the first part, when you just climb, you want to deduce the principles, is slightly not well established. If you look in many different books, even textbooks, classical textbooks, they all are slightly different and they are slightly uneasy. They all reach the same point, the canonical distribution, and then the mechanism is the same. But how to get there is not very well established, in fact. So let me see, what is the problem? You know, when you first encounter statistical mechanics in school. By the way, does it look well? Difficult to control. When you first encounter statistical mechanics, then all the story that you learn appears very natural. You have to talk about a system, like, say, the coffee, which has a very, very large number of particles. So then you realize that, well, you cannot know everything about what is happening there. There are simply too many particles. You also realize that one cup of coffee behaves very much like another cup of coffee. So somehow, although you most probably you didn't prepare the same thing for the two different cups, it doesn't really matter as far as you are concerned. You know whether it is hot enough or not, whether it's sweet enough, whether you like it or you're not, independent of the details of how those particles move. Because you have this lack of knowledge, then it is very obvious when you are told all you can do is just to look at averages, and these averages will be informative enough as far as you are concerned. So that is fine, that is perfect, and you are satisfied. And then you go to lesson number 2, and you encounter something that I would like to call the great paradox of statistical mechanics. And this great paradox is that the subjective lack of knowledge, the fact that you don't know what the situation is, apparently has objective implications. So let me make the thing more precise. Let's see how it works. Well, you start with something that you like to call a macro state. A big description of what is going on. You give just the basic parameters, say the number, roughly the number of particles. You know, I have 200 milliliters of coffee with this pressure and that temperature. Then there are many, many microstates that are compatible with these macroscopic parameters. And you count the number of microstates that are compatible with the macroscopic conditions. And you get a number, n. Then you do a simple thing. You just take the logarithm of n. Why not? N is too big. Logarithm is much more manageable. You call it entropy, which is a very good name because very few people understand exactly what entropy is. And then, well, the entropy depends on the energy. So you take the derivative. And suddenly you find that the way in which the number of microstates, that is, how much you didn't know about the system, changes, has objective things. You know, it's either too hot or too cold. Put your finger in the coffee. It's very objective whether you get burned or not. And that has to do with the way in which the number of microstates, that is, how much I don't know, what does that have to do with whether the coffee is hot or cold? So that is a paradox. Somehow, definitely, it works because this formula gives the correct temperature. But why does it work? That is something that people have struggled to make it precise. And at the end of the day, you know that this number n is about potential situations because there exists an actual microstate. So you ask, how does a particular cup of coffee depend on what I don't know about other possible cups of coffee in this world? Okay. Well, if you are a student, you don't have too much time to think about this because immediately you have to go and compute things, and that is pretty tough. But later on, when you don't have what else to do and you start thinking about it, you try to better understand how does it actually work. Now, there were many people who suggested many solutions, and I will just mention two big directions of working. One of them is due to Gibbs, and is to talk about an ensemble average. So he considers that you do not have only one cup of coffee, but you have many, many. Just imagine that you have many cups of coffee. And all of them are prepared according to the same macroscopic parameters, but the microscopic things are not under your control. And then you have to take an average over this thing, which is wonderful as a formal tool, but in reality, you do not have a large number of cups of coffee. Even if you would just consider all the cups prepared by Starbucks, they're still not enough to get the average. So it's a good conceptual tool, but you still have only one. Okay, well, what other possibility is there? The other possibility is to talk about time average. That is, you look at one cup of coffee, but one cup of coffee now and one a second later have more or less the same macroscopic parameters. Suppose it doesn't cool so quickly. But the microstate changed. So in effect, waiting some time, I prepare different microscopic states that are all compatible with a macroscopic state. So then the idea is, instead of making an ensemble average over different cups of coffee, I could take only one and just wait time, and I will create many others. Now, both of these approaches are problematic in their own ways. So for example, this time average, well, I put there a keyword, ergodicity. How do I know that actually it explores all the possible microscopic states? Perhaps if I just wait, the state of all these molecules will just move among a slightly smaller number of possible microstates and will never reach all the possibilities. So there is a lot of work done to find out what particular systems, what Hamiltonians are such that in time they will come closer to all possible states that are compatible. And it is also a question of time. You know, I put my finger in the coffee, and if it is hot, I feel it now. I don't have to wait a year for the coffee to explore all the phase space, even if that would be possible. There are other technical difficulties also with the ensemble average. You see, in the case of the ensemble average, you say, let us take with equal probability all the possible microstates that are consistent with a macroscopic state. And why? Well, because all we know is just the macroscopic situation. So then we take a Bayesian point of view and we say, well, let's take everything else with equal probability. And this is called the equal a priori probability postulate. But of course, if I would just prepare coffee, you know, I just boil water and put it there, I don't know whether I actually that particular procedure would produce all possible microscopic states with equal probability. So it's a question of physics, not depending on my lack of knowledge about the system. Now, the situation is not so bleak as I try to represent. And people tried, well, to justify it in a way or another. And everybody is happy because the end product is correct. So the results that are deduced, you know, the canonical ensemble and so on, they work. You do computation, everything is perfect. So as far as the end product is all right, then people accept more or less that there is a lot of truth also in the way of defining. Well, we tried to think in a different way. And the main issue is to try somehow to avoid a subjective lack of knowledge that becomes, that gains objective implications. Now, you need to start somewhere and put a lack of knowledge in the system, because this is a statistical system about which you don't know everything. The interesting thing is that quantum mechanics actually offers you a way of doing that. And many people notice this, but I mentioned here Yakira Haronov, who's the one who told me this thing in the first place. Namely, suppose you have a very large number of particles. In this case, I took spins. And that's all. That is, there is nothing else, no bath, no nothing. It's just a closed system composed of these n spins. And suppose that they are in a pure state. So I know everything about the system as a whole. Then the entropy of the whole system is zero and will stay zero for all times. It's a pure state. No matter how it evolves, it always remains a pure state. And I have complete knowledge about the system. There is no uncertainty whatsoever. But now suppose I look at some of the spins here. Well, even if all the, suppose at the beginning that they all started in a direct product state, say all up. Then in particular, not only do I know everything about all the spins, I also know the state of these spins of interest. But as time goes, if there is an interaction, these spins may get entangled with the rest. So now, if I just ask myself, what is the state of this subsystem? Well, I don't know what that state is. But this is an objective lack of knowledge. Not only I don't know, nobody knows. They are simply entangled with the rest. So quantum mechanics offers the possibility of having objective lack of knowledge, although you know everything about the whole universe. And perhaps this may give you a way of defining all these quantities, like entropy and so on, in an objective way. And then there will be no longer a paradox. Why do they have objective implications? So here I put some formulas. We just said that if the system starts in a pure state, the system being the whole universe, well, perhaps the wording is not good. Let me call everything here the universe. Big, big, big closed system. And this is my system of interest, say my cup of coffee. And this is, the rest is the environment, say all the molecules of air here in the room. But we are then closed. There is nothing else. The overall entropy stays zero, but the entropy of my little system of interest may increase. Now the question is, does this idea lead to what I need for statistical mechanics? Is it enough or not? So let's try to put a little more details on this general picture. Okay, so here we are. Consider the following thing. That big black box, oh, it's a funny system. I see that it erases things. Okay, that was, how can I get that? It has some hysteresis. Okay, so that big block, big black box is the universe, which is a big closed system. And I divided it into two pieces. One piece, a subsystem, and the rest of it I will call the environment. Now, on this whole universe, I will impose some restrictions, R. Those are, you may think of them as the macroscopic parameters of your problem. But the formal way in which I say is that, first of all, I look at the Hilbert space of the universe, HU, which is simply the tensor product of the Hilbert space of my subsystem and the Hilbert space of the environment, of the rest. And now I say, look, let me not consider the entire Hilbert space of the universe, but only a subsystem, a sub-Hilbert space, sorry, H of R, whatever that H of R is. Now, in general, when you do statistical mechanics, these restrictions are quite specific. A total energy in the system, or the total energy being between E and delta E, or a given number of particles, or a volume, whatever. I will not make any assumptions like that. I will want to keep the restriction to be general. So all I say, there is a sub-Hilbert space HR. And the state of the whole universe will belong to HR. Okay. Now, what is the postulate of equal a priori probabilities? Well, that says something very simple. All you know is that the system is in HR. Sorry, the universe. Sometimes I get confused, my little system and the rest. All you know is that the state of the universe is in HR. Because you don't know anything more, you have to take all possible states in HR with equal probability. So you have to think, since you do not have any knowledge about the system, that the state of the whole universe is the identity density matrix in HR. That is the state of the whole thing here. So the density matrix of the universe is the identity, and this dimension of R is there for normalization only, because the trace of a density matrix must be 1. And now I define the state of the subsystem, which is simply trace the identity matrix over everything, trace it over the environment. And when you trace it over the environment, you are left with some density matrix for your subsystem. And I will call that the canonical state of the system. In fact, I would like to call that the generalized canonical state, because you have all kinds of canonical states when you put constraints on energy or number of particles. This is a generalized one. It depends only on the general constraint R. So you have a state omega S. And, well, that's what it is. This omega S is produced by taking subjective lack of knowledge. I started with a state of the universe to be the identity density matrix. But that's exactly what I don't want to be. What I would like to do is not include any sort of subjective lack of knowledge in this story. So what I would like to do is to start with a pure state, psi of the universe, not with identity matrix. And then I want to compute what is the state of the subsystem in this particular pure state of the universe. How do I do it? Well, I have to trace the density matrix corresponding to the pure state psi of the universe. I trace the environment out, and I'm left with some density matrix rho of my subsystem. And here is the result. For almost all states psi in of the universe, if I look at my restriction on the subsystem, that is almost canonical. So I don't have to start assuming that the universe is this in this identity density matrix. I could pick a particular state. The system is insensitive to that. For almost all states, the system is in the canonical distribution, regardless of where that particular pure state of the universe is. So this is a purely kinematic thing. It tells for almost all psi. Okay, I will just use volume in the Hilbert space. And if you look what is the volume, I will come to that particular measure. But let's take it for almost all states. Why is not for all states? Well, of course, you know that there are states that are not already in equilibrium with the rest. So a cup of coffee, hopefully, if I get, it's not in equilibrium with the room temperature, but it will be a bit warmer. So there must be states in which the state of the subsystem is not what I would obtain if I just let it equilibrate with the rest. But those are very few. And how few? Well, okay, let's talk about mathematics now. First of all, let's see what it means close. Then we'll talk about the volume. So I want to look at the density matrix rho of the subsystem and look what is the distance between that and the canonical state. And I measure the distance in trace 1. Well, this is a mathematical nicety. There are many different measures that, or distances between two density matrices. This particular one, which is norm one, is the one that is effective. It says that every measurement that you produce that you could do on omega gives probabilities that are very close to those that you do by measuring rho. And that is valid for almost every observable that you do. So this is a very good measure. Now, some particular rho's may be far from omega, from the canonical state. That's why I would like to average over the distance between the actual state and the canonical state over all different possible states of the universe. And what do we find? Well, we found that this distance is smaller than a number here, which is ds, where the square root of ds over dE effective. Let me explain. ds is the dimension of the Hilbert space of the small subsystem. dE is the dimension of the Hilbert space of the environment. dE effective is the dimension of the Hilbert space of the environment given the restriction R. Now, when the system has fewer particles than the environment, the dimension of the Hilbert space is exponentially small than the dimension of the Hilbert space of the environment. Because if you have, for example, a system of n spins, so you have n spins and you look at a subsystem k, the environment is 2 to the n minus k, and this is d of the environment, and d of the system is just 2 to the k. So if k is much smaller than n, then the difference between these two numbers is exponential. And the fact that I'm looking at the effective space doesn't modify too much the results. So this tells that the difference, the average difference between, or the average distance between the state of a subsystem, the actual state when the universe is pure, and the canonical state is exponentially small, and in fact becomes smaller and smaller as I take more and more particles, which is the limit of statistical mechanics. What else? This is about the distance. Now, one can make an even stronger statement, namely, let me look at the following thing. Let me look at the volume, well, instead of number of states, because everything is continuous, I have to look at the volume in Hilbert space, which is such that the actual state of the system, the distance between the actual state of the system and the canonical state is larger than some value, epsilon. Well, what would I expect? The larger the distance, the smaller the number of states. So I want that most of the states will not be at a larger distance. So this volume is like e to minus something. Well, what is that something? The most important thing is dr, which is the dimension of the restricted Hilbert space. So when the dimension of the Hilbert space increases, this value here decreases exponentially. So it tells that the volume of states that are far from the canonical state is exponentially small. In fact, it is double exponential small, because dr is the dimension of the Hilbert space, of the restricted Hilbert space. And that is exponential in the number of particles in the universe. So this is a double exponential thing. So what is the big image? The big image is that I have HR. Let me try to put it here. I have, this is the Hilbert space, HR, which is a subspace of the total Hilbert space of the universe. Where the Hilbert space of the universe is the Hilbert space of my system tensor, the Hilbert space of the rest of the universe, which I call the environment. Now, if you look at an arbitrary point there, some arbitrary state psi, it is such that if you look what is the associated rho of the system, where you trace psi psi over the environment, this is approximate the canonical state. Now, there will be also some tiny volume here in which the states are not like that. These are the states that are not yet in equilibrium or whatever. But this tiny volume here is double exponential small versus the whole volume. Okay. So what do we actually learn from this? Well, I would say the main thing is that we don't need a subjective lack of knowledge. That is, I don't need to consider that I don't know where this state is and to average over this entire HR. I don't need to do that. Every single point, as far as I look at the subsystem, behaves like the average over everything. So if I want to put that in big words, I would say that this postulate of equal a priori probabilities that we started with is, in a sense, misleading and not necessary. So the fact that there were problems in trying to justify it is not just because people weren't able to come up with a very sharp and crisp definition. It's because there were basic problems with this postulate. And that is not needed. Because what we suggest is we can replace it, not with a postulate, but with a principle, that is something that we can prove, of apparently equal a priori probabilities. That is, although the state is a pure state, as far as the subsystem is concerned, it behaves as if I would have taken the average over the rest. Okay? Now, the statements as they go till now are purely kinematic. That is, I didn't say anything about Hamiltonian, about how it evolves, about how it happens. I also didn't say anything about what the restriction is. So let me make a number of remarks. First of all, about what the restriction is and what the canonical state is. Well, one of the basic problems in statistical mechanics is to find what the canonical state is. How does it look? So to find what is omega s. And when you take some specific conditions, like you fix the energy of the system, you fix the temperature, you presume that there are no long-range interactions so that you can more or less isolate a subsystem. It doesn't interact with everything else in the rest of the universe. In that case, this becomes e to minus h over kT, and it becomes Boltzmannian. And it is well known what sort of approximations and assumptions you need to do. Now, we don't have anything to say about what is omega s, what is the canonical state. In fact, we just have an omega s that depends on the restriction r that we put. And we are not in the business of calculating what is omega s given the restriction r is. The scope of this line of thinking is to say that the actual state of the system is close to omega s. So I can tell you, if instead of averaging over all states of the universe, you pick a pure state, you are very close to what you would have done. Now, where you are, that is, what is omega s, I don't know. But I can fix the distance between them. That is one thing. The second thing is that I'm not bound to usual restrictions, that is, to usual way of setting the macroscopic parameters. This result about the distance between the pure state and the average holds for whatever restriction I would like to put, which opens a lot of possibilities. I don't need to say that the energy is within a fixed band. I don't need to say anything about the spectrum of the Hamiltonian, whether the density of states in the environment is dense or not. As far as this kinematic statement works, I don't even need to tell you what a Hamiltonian is. This is purely a property of large Hilbert spaces. And in large Hilbert spaces, you have something that is similar to the law of large numbers for in ordinary classical theory. And one of the main mathematical tools for that is, I think it's worthwhile reminding, is something called Levy's lemma. And Levy's lemma says the following. Suppose you have a function f that is defined on a sphere, and a d-dimensional sphere. Well, the Hilbert space is a sphere because every pure state has length 1. It's normalized to 1. And now you want to look, you pick up an arbitrary point p on the sphere, and you would like to know for how many points p you are far from the average of the function f on the sphere. And you would want to say that if I pick the point p at random, the probability that the distance between the actual value of the function and the average, the probability that this distance is large, is exponentially small. And it is small in the dimension of the sphere. And there are some factors here, out of which the most important is eta, which is the maximum value of the gradient. Of course, if a function changes very rapidly, it can very quickly get to a value that is different from the average. But once I can fix the rate of change, almost every other point is very close to the average as the dimension of the sphere increases. Put it in a different way, almost every point on a sphere is next to the equator when the dimension of the sphere is very big. Now, this is very counterintuitive, because for an ordinary sphere, well, you have the equator, but you have many points that are far, like the North Pole and all the others. But as you increase the dimensions, almost every point is next to the equator. And in fact, almost every equator is next to any other equator. And because all of them are put over there, also the value of the function is like the average, and the average is like the value on the equator. So this is, I don't want to talk anything more detailed about the mathematics, just to remind you that there exists, this Levy's lemma is in fact the equivalent of the law of large numbers as far as large Hilbert spaces are concerned. And then all sorts of properties of large Hilbert spaces can be approached with Levy's lemma. The final thing is to talk about the dynamics. This was a purely kinematic thing. This is the Hilbert space. Most states are such that they are close to the average. But suppose, again, I start here. Suppose I start with a state of the universe such that my subsystem is not thermalized. And now I let time evolve. What will happen with it? So I have my cup of coffee. It's very hot. I just put it on my desk and I wait. Well, I know what my cup of coffee will do. It will just cool down and get into equilibrium. So how can I see that? Well, first of all, my hot cup of coffee is a point here in this very, very small volume where it is not yet thermalized with the rest. And the pure state of the universe starts evolving. Because this region is exponentially small, pretty quickly the state will leave that region and will now just wander inside the rest of the Hilbert space. Perhaps eventually will come back. Well, I shouldn't have this thing here for the problem that I'm looking for. Let me look just at the evolution of this state. Now, once it is out, the property of all these points out, so of this point, for example, is that the state of the subsystem is canonical. So I don't need any ergodic thing. It's not that I need to average over this trajectory to go next to every point. But at every moment of time, during its propagation, at every moment of time, the subsystem is already in the canonical state, or very close to it. So that is the general image. Now, perhaps for some Hamiltonians that are very malicious, if I start with a state that is not thermalized, I will just remain in this tiny volume, and it will never get to equilibrium. Well, that is a question that depends on the particular Hamiltonians, and it is still to be investigated. But this, as far as we are concerned, is the general image of how a state gets thermalized. It is simply the Hilbert space is carved into these two different volumes, an enormous volume, double exponentially larger than this, where the states are thermalized, and a tiny, tiny volume where they are not. And this is probably everything. And the main idea is that entanglement, at the end of the day, is the thing that allowed for introducing objective lack of knowledge. And more than that, sort of averaged entanglement over the large Hilbert spaces is exactly what is required to derive all the known properties of statistical mechanics. Thank you very much. Yes. Well, definitely that is the case. But I would make one step further. In classical mechanics, there is no way of doing that. So perhaps we need to go to quantum statistical mechanics because classical statistical mechanics is by itself not well defined. That is what I would like to say. I have no way of getting objective lack of knowledge classically. And the fact that things work, it's simply because classical mechanics is a good approximation of quantum mechanics in a given regime. But conceptually, I was not able to do that step. The formulas work just because they are a good approximation of the real world that is quantum. So that would be my point of view.
Yes. say, oh, well, yeah. If you could do experiments, then what became subjective is objective, but you don't know that there's not another level of nature protection from knowing that there are forces within the world.
Well, okay, yes. Well, that is fair enough, but let me make a more precise statement. Okay, so let me go back to this Hilbert space. This is HR, the restricted Hilbert space. There are two levels, two possible averages that one can do. One of them is to say, look, the state of the universe, as I take it, the state of the universe, because I don't know anything about it, I have to take the identity over this restricted subspace. And then, if I want to trace the environment out and look only to my subsystem, I will get the canonical state. So this is my first average. I average over all possible pure states of the whole universe that are consistent with this. We said, no, instead of this, you take here a pure state of the universe, you trace, and you get a density matrix for your subsystem. So we do not have an average here. Nevertheless, you are left with a density matrix for your subsystem. So you say, if I come and measure it, well, perhaps I get one result or another, because the density matrix of the subsystem might depend on other observables and hidden things and things that future will tell me. So looking at a density matrix for the subsystem is also an average. But there are two different averages here. This one is an average that we, this is the one that I called objective average. But never mind, it may be subjective, maybe whatever the future will deserve. The main technical message of this talk is that this average is not needed. This is an average over all states. So that is important. Your question refers to this. And here, I really don't know what to say, and I would totally agree with you. But what is important, regardless of what future will reserve to us, the fact that I don't need to make this average and I can take a pure state, that is here to stay. So that. Yeah, I think that that is strong. And it is strong, the fact that that is totally encapsulated there. Ah, that's a tough one. I have to recognize I don't know. Okay. However, I can tell you some interesting systems. For example, if you have a system that has long-range interaction, I don't know, gravitational interaction that cannot be screened, in that case, there, presumably, I will take the restriction also an energetic restriction, but I cannot isolate my subsystem. So the canonical state will be totally different. That is one particular example. Examples in which the restriction is not energetical, I don't know. I believe that this is, well, we are just at the beginning. That's the honest answer. Yes.
Statistical chances, like not only if I could prepare the coffee cup in pure state, I don't think it's worth it. Somehow isolated, keep from getting entangled. It seems to me that it ought to be the case that the certain dynamic properties would all be there in the town.
Okay. So what should I answer? First of all, you have a worry, then you find it implausible. The fact that is a worry, well, we are worried because we approach this world by believing that it's classical, and then we learn it is not. And, well, it is a question that even philosophically I don't know exactly how to formulate. Would the world have been the same as it is had it been classical and not quantum mechanical, but having had the same correspondence relation? I don't know. The world is quantum mechanical, and I don't know what would have happened had it not been, and in what way it would not be. So I don't know how to isolate it. That is to say, I believe that the deep reason that things behave as they behave in statistical mechanics is because the system is quantum mechanical. And I haven't seen examples. Suppose you turn the question around and you say, can I envisage a system that is quantum mechanical but will not get entangled and still have the same properties? And the answer is probably no. Every moment when the system gets at equilibrium, it does get entangled with the environment. The issue is that getting to equilibrium, thermalizing, for example, means that any perturbation that I put in my subsystem just leaks out. And if one perturbation leaks out, if another one leaks out, then quantum mechanically, if I put a superposition, I will get entangled. So every single situation that gets thermalized necessarily contains the possibility of that thing getting entangled with the rest. Otherwise, you do not lose information. You don't get thermalized. So I believe that actually the fact that nature is quantum mechanical, that is the deep reason things work. So I'm not worried.
Then let me try it another way.
Okay.
System, a mathematical system, and we do some computer simulation of classical evolution.
Yes.
And we observe thermal equilibrium coming in for one. Now, you would say that has to do with artifacts that are introduced by the approximation in our simulation.
Let me stop you already here. We observe the system in thermal equilibrium. Actually, you observe one particular microstate of that. What do you mean, thermal equilibrium? You want to say now that if you would repeat this simulation many times, you will get other different microstates? What exactly is that? Is the core of the problem, is already at that level. That is what I would like to know. Yeah, of course, yeah. So that exactly there comes the problem. Because now you have to say, I make an average over many simulations where I modify slightly the parameter. Or I average over different types, time steps in that simulation, which are exactly the problems that I started at the beginning. So that's exactly the basic problem that you encounter.
Yeah. What about natural pieces on that?
Well, depends how many pieces. However, let me give you a simpler example where I have one piece. Suppose I have a gas and has many molecules, okay? And I have a white one here, more or less like the others, but I have only one. Now, it's an ideal gas. where would that molecule be? Well, you say, look, it's probable that it will be anywhere, equal probability that I will find it here or here or here or here. Now, in one particular situation, if it is a classical thing, that white one is there, is not anywhere else. Consider now the quantum system. And the quantum system, I say, I have these molecules, it's an ideal gas, and in one particular instance, the state is one particular pure state of the whole thing. Okay? So it's no average over different ways of preparing. I prepare it in one particular way. That thing is not there. It's in a density matrix that is allowed to be anywhere. So let me put it in a different way. Suppose that I prepare many, many copies of this. I have another box here, and I have another box here. And suppose it is classical, and I prepare them identical. So in this situation, I look where is the white particle, will be there. In this situation, I look where is the white particle, it will be identical. So if I do have control over the microstate at the beginning, and I let it run, after some time, I will always find my white particle exactly there. Now go to a quantum system. You prepare all the time psi initial. Suppose that you are able to do that, and you run it to time for, let it run for a time t. Now you make a measurement. Where is the white particle? Sometimes you find it here, sometimes you find it there, sometimes you find it there. And if you have many copies, you will find it at random. So that would be the difference between a classical system that I always prepare in the same way and the quantum system. Would be a dramatic difference for that particle. Now, what you want is to take more particles and average, then per origin, then perhaps you will wash out this effect because you don't know which particle you are talking. But I can zoom in and look at one, and I see then a dramatic difference. So now depends how much I average and so on. Well, one cannot solve all the problems in one go. It is the nature of the Hilbert space that is continuous. And if you want to say you cannot just count states, that makes no sense. If you take the volume and you take the Haar measure, which is the standard measure, then this is the result. So technically, I tell you, if I take the standard invariant measure on the Hilbert spaces, then this is the situation. Now, if you take a very, very, very skewed measure, you may run into different things. However, I believe that most measures behave like this because the ratio between the tiny volume and the rest in the standard matrix is double exponential small. So you need to work very hard to change your measure in a very, very non-trivial way to modify this ratio. But, okay, that's more or less what I can say. Yes. 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 Indeed. Yes. Yes. Well, that happens if you are essentially at zero temperature. Then you will still have some entanglement, and what we prescribe here is that you will get entangled. However, let me put it like that. The particular state that you are in, that depends on the restriction. Now, you will find out that if that restriction is that essentially the temperature is low enough, this state here will become ground state. So there is no contradiction into that. That would be a particular state when it is not entangled, but that is, as far as I know, the only situation. If, however, you have even, say, a degenerate ground state, and the system is coupled to the rest so that you can have transition, like in a lambda system or something like that, then essentially information is lost, and you will get entangled. This is a very, very degenerate, a very particular situation that you consider. But let me make another statement, which is the information gets lost from the system. It means it has to go somewhere else. And because of unitarity, then it cannot stay just in one place. So it really has to travel. Because, for example, if it was excited in the first excited state or in the second excited state, they cannot, or in two different excited states having the same energy, they cannot just dump it outside, because then it would be non-orthogonal if there would be just one state available. So it needs to circulate a lot. And that's why we get equilibrium only when we put a small system in contact with a large system. We need a way so that enough perturbations here will be absorbed by the rest. So that's what, you know, tangent direction. Yes. Yes.
One point. You
okay.
Proposed,
yeah.
The paradox.
Indeed. Yes. Indeed. Yes. Yes.
But for the most part, you didn't. You did.
I didn't.
Very modest about our place. Yeah. Very, very modest. Look how sort of minuscule place we occupy in the cosmos. So many things fall into place if we're assiduous about gathering data and using probabilistic methods. Yeah. Nevertheless, not locking the way to the truth. If errors are too much for grasping.
What?
Anytime that you, like you should always strive for the truth, but anytime you believe that you are ever going to find the truth, that's religion. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, okay, what should I comment? Okay. Well, thank you.